This is the Best of Scorecard Scribblings with Brent Weber. Your host hasn't seen everything in sports, but sometimes he acts like it, and his guests probably have. Now, the host of Scorecard Scribblings, your sports guy, Brent Weber.
Hey, a good April 8th, 2020 to you all out there. Thanks for tuning in, downloading, listening in at this continued period of history where we are without sports, and more importantly, we are keeping ourselves as quiet as possible in terms of human interaction because of the COVID-19 pandemic. No one makes fun of it, but we do try to have some fun elsewhere because we know you're stuck at home. And I appreciate you tuning in tonight because my guest, I could make a joke that he's one of the great fill-ins of all time because, man, you have had to step in for some big moments. But my guest is, quite honestly, in my experience, one of the most consistent pros at calling any game on television or radio that I have witnessed in my career. And Steve Fizioc, one of the voices of the Kansas City Royals, joins us now from his home. Where are you guys calling home these days, Steve?
Hi, Brent. We're in Stillwell, Kansas, and I grew up in the state of Kansas. I went to Shawnee Mission North High School, then went on to Kansas State University. And then my journey took me around the globe, so back home. And so it's part of the circle of life.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, you grew up a Kansas City Royals fan as a kid, you know, and when in our business we all say, well, all I ever really wanted to do was be the play-by-play guy for, in my case, the Braves, right? And in your case, you know, you were this kid working at KHS Radio in Hastings, Nebraska, launching your career, and circle of life comes around, and in 2012, I guess, is when you got to the Royals after, well, many stops.
You're exactly in, you know, broadcasting Major League Baseball for a number of years, and when Rex Hudler and I, who were with the Angels for a number of seasons in Southern California, were given the opportunity to come to the Midwest, we grabbed it, and we knew we were coming to the Midwest at the right time because the Royals had an excellent organization they were building. They had won championships at the single A, the double A, the triple A. Guys like Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas and Kelvin Herrera and Yordano Batura and Salvador Perez and on and on. And so when we got there, we knew the guys that who had just made it to the major leagues and who were very, very young, it would be a matter of time before they were not like contending, but winning the Central and then winning perhaps a world championship, which they finally did in 2015.
Which was one of the great ones. I mean, if you love the game of baseball, that was one of the tremendous seasons. And you, quite frankly, you've been blessed in that manner. It's not your only championship, right, in baseball.
No, I was with the Angels in 2002 when they won the World Championship, and that was very special because it was done in similar fashion to the Royals, because the Angels had done very, very little for a number of years, but they hired this combination, did Disney, and Bill Stoneman, the general manager, and Mike Socia, the field manager, and they had the same mentality. They wanted to build a team around pitching and defense and base running, and boy, did they ever. And what took place in 2002 was the previous year, the Seattle Mariners had absolutely run away with the American League West and eclipsed the Royals by some 40 games. And then 1 year later, because of a number of acquisitions, team players growing up and putting together a great bullpen, the Angels were able to win a World Championship. And I always remember that bullpen of Troy Percival and Brendan Donnelly and Francisco Rodriguez, who I believe went 5-1 in the postseason. And it was very similar to what the Royals did in 14 and 15, where they had this ridiculously good bullpen and Greg Holland and Wade Davis and Ryan Madsen and Kelvin Herrera and on and on. And they were able to win a championship in similar fashion.
Steve Fizeak is my guest tonight. And Steve, I really am grateful that we haven't talked in years, but I appreciate you taking the time out. And sometimes you worry that a guest, you know, can fill an hour. But in your life, calling games an hour, that's about two innings in the live ball era. And
it
also,
really,
you know, we're going to talk, I want to talk quite a bit, actually, about your new life. It's part of your life as an author, The Walls of Lucca and Above the Walls, which is now out, historic fiction. I really want to dig into that a little bit. But, you know, we're kind of, I want to talk baseball here at the top because of the timeliness of it. Right now, you would be so deep into it. You know, I was looking for some spring training games to see if you got any in this year. Sounded like maybe you did, but the bottom line is, you know, people, there is a mindset when you are a somebody who works with a team and, you know, travels, follows, and so on. There's a mindset where you prepare, you fill your brain with what you can, but you have to have a physical mindset, and right now you're on hold just like the players.
No, you're exactly right, and it's funny you bring that up because my wife and I were out in the backyard late in the evening, and she turned to me and she said, you know what? I think this is the first time we've been together on an evening in the spring for as long as we've been married. And we've been married 35 years, and I've been doing Major League Baseball for 35 years, but it was like 75 degrees, an absolutely beautiful evening in the Midwest, and my wife and I were out in the backyard just kind of visiting, and I just thought, she's right. But there's a part of me that's missing it, because when so much of your life has been invested in a sport you love so much, like Major League Baseball, you miss it. Mm-hmm. And I missed it. And it, even the losses, I mean, the Royals lost 104 games 2 years ago. They lost 103 games last year. But I still look forward to going to the ballpark and putting the time in and preparing for the game and seeing what Team A has to do to beat Team B. So, yes, I do miss it, but I also am very aware of the precious time that I'm receiving with my wife, because we've been married, like I said, 35 years. We have two kids. We now have three grandchildren, and it's really wonderful. And so do I miss baseball? Yes, I do. But I also cherish the time with my wife right now in this quarantine situation.
It's interesting to me, and you know, you have done every sport. Those who aren't familiar with necessarily you beyond your baseball stuff, I mean, we know you started out doing college games, Kansas State, Cincinnati Bengals, Reds. I'm just running down Giants. MLB had you at ESPN, Fox Sports, San Diego Padres, the Warriors, the Rams, the Grizzlies. Am I getting them? Anaheim, the Los Angeles Angels, I think, Kansas City Royals, TBS had you on national games, and so on and so on. And I only say this so people understand. It's interesting because you're a Midwest, you know, born and bred. I knew you as a West Coast guy, and most of your career really has been, you know, from Kansas City West.
You're right, because we spent 26 years in California and absolutely loved it. 10 years in the Bay Area, 16 in Southern California. I did the Pac-10 Conference for 25 years and had wonderful friendships with coaches like Lute Olson and Jim Herrick and Steve Lavin and Mike Montgomery and Ernie Kent and Lorenzo Romar and on and on. Yeah, there is a part of me that misses it, but you do move on. And that's why it's almost like that one movie. I think it was the name of it was Yes. When anyone would call me up and they say, can you do this ball game? I would always say yes. Matter of fact, the very first assignment I ever did for ESPN, and this was back in the early 80s, maybe mid 80s, they called me up to do a truck and tractor pull. Now, I don't know anything about truck and tractor pulls, but I said yes. And that led me to a college baseball game, which led me to another college baseball game with ESPN, which led me to a Major League Baseball game, which led me to a full-time package with them doing college football, college basketball, and Major League Baseball. So I always said yes, and there have been so many times in my life where I didn't get a job, and there have been other times where I was surprised when I did get a job. Mm-hmm. So I never was afraid of putting my neck out there, whether it was truck and tractor pull or a playoff game with TBS.
Well, Steve Fizyok, it's a blast to talk to you. Want to take a break, but when we come back, I do want to delve into the world of storytelling, because that is what we do. We are historians. When we call a game a play-by-play, it's the way I look at it. But there's also a deep understanding of the human elements that I think has been a trademark of your broadcasting career, which you have now utilized in your writing career. And so when we come back, we want to talk about that, those elements, and then we'll still talk some more baseball as we roll on through this Scorecard Scribblings evening with Steve Fizyok, the voice, one of the voices of the Kansas City Royals. I know you're a very humble guy, so you'd like me to say everybody. This is a great broadcast crew, but I listen to those Royals games on the MLB at Bat app all the time. So that's why I just want to call you the voice, but you're one of a bunch of guys that do a great job with them. Anyway, we'll be back with Steve Fizyok in just a minute. You're listening to Scorecard Scribblings.
It's a high noon Pac-12 hoops battle at Maples Pavilion as the Arizona Wildcats are in town to face the Stanford Cardinal. Hi, everybody. I'm Steve Fizyok. This is former Wooden Award winner Marcus Johnson, and we have two teams in Arizona and Stanford that are tied at 6-4, two games back of the lead and equal in almost every single statistical category. So the winner might be the team that is the toughest and plays with the most energy.
Well, Arizona's struggling these early.
Make this year turtly awesome with the Turtle Bay membership. Get free access to world-class exhibits, exciting animal shows, towering playgrounds, and much more. Family memberships are just $90. That's less than $10 a month for a whole year of fun. Get yours today at turtlebay.org.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane and Shasta Tanks. Because of the probability of our power being shut off during wind events or fires, many people are installing standby generators. Shasta Gas is now selling standby generators with propane tanks so that you will have home power during these outages. Give us a call at 365-3793 to get a quote on a generator and tank installation. That number again is 365-3793.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Make this year totally awesome with the Turtle Bay membership. Get free access to world-class exhibits, exciting animal shows, towering playgrounds, and much more. Family memberships are just $90. That's less than $10 a month for a whole year of fun. Get yours today at turtlebay.org.
This is the best of Scorecard Scribblings.
If you can dream it, you can do it. These guys dreamed it, and they did it.
That's the voice. That is the voice of my guest tonight, Steve Fizioc. That was the celebration for the world champion Angels at Disneyland, and where one you and HUD got to kind of MC that event. But those you don't get every day.
Brett, that is the first time I have ever heard that audio. And it's really remarkable because there's a great story behind that. The only game I did not get to see was Game 6 of the 2002 World Series because I had to do a college football game at the Rose Bowl with UCLA, and so I couldn't watch my Angels play. And I remember the team was down 5-0, I believe, in the sixth inning, and I was at the Rose Bowl, and I said, I'm not going to hang around here and watch the Giants celebrate on my field. I'll just get in the car and I'll drive down, and if I make it in time to Anaheim, I'll pull in and watch the end of the game. Well, they had a terrible traffic jam, and I called my home along the way. My daughter Ryan answered, and we were down 5-0 at the time, and I said, hey honey, I know how much you love the Angels, and I sure would like to see them win a world championship, but they've had a good year and you should be proud of that. And my daughter goes, Dad, the game's not over. And I go, oh, you're right. And, of course, the Angels rally. They have this remarkable comeback. They win the game. And the very next morning, I have this calendar in my office, and I'm downstairs having a cup of coffee. Obviously, the series is tied at 3 wins each between the Giants and the Angels. And on this calendar, it has positive messages from, you know, the great leaders in history, whether it's Teddy Roosevelt or Abraham Lincoln or Jesus or Gandhi or, well, this case, I turn it over and on the calendar, it is, I kid you not, October 27th. And the quote is from Walt Disney. Well, wow. Disney, of course, owned the team. And the quote was, if you can dream it, you can do it. And I yelled out to the kitchen to my wife. I said, Stacy, the Angels ain't losing today. I mean, this is pretty magical. And I forgot about that moment until you just played it on the air, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing, this history that came back to me, and that story of driving back, calling my daughter having more confidence than I did, and then the calendar. If you can dream it, you can do it. And it was just so serendipitous.
That's just a wonderful story. And, you know, as we think of the connections of I think of this time now, baseball will be back, and we can later on talk about some of the things they've talked about. But when the game does return, what I have seen, and you know, normally, I'll be honest, you know, I'm getting up there, so I don't spend my whole day on Twitter, Facebook. I'm not looking at all the little clips, but on MLB and stuff, I do get to see them. And I understand that's where this generation of athlete is. And I've been really impressed with the fun and the family blurbs and snippets and even practices and workouts that so many Major League Baseball players have done to stay in touch with their fans. Have you noticed that? And I think that will, to me, be something that really, when the game comes back, is going to mean a lot to baseball.
I think you're exactly right, Brent, because I don't think we really recognize how much people love the game. And I'll give you an example. This was 30 years ago. I was having a conversation with my mother about what an insignificant job I have as a play-by-play broadcaster. I said, Mom, I mean, let's be real. I tell stories about guys who hold wooden sticks and try and hit a round ball. I said, how important is that? And she looked at me, and she was raised in New York, and she said, Steve, all I can tell you is I went through the Depression, World War II, and Yankee Stadium, the Polo Grounds, and Ebbets Field were filled because people needed somewhere to go to get away from the misery that was taking place in their life. And if you can give them joy for just 3 hours a day, you've done a great job, and you have a great job. And I took my profession a little more seriously. Before, I just loved it. I just loved doing play-by-play. I loved the storytelling aspect of it. But I thought, you know what? If someone's having a rough day and they turn on the radio and they're listening to a football or a basketball or a baseball game, and for just a quick moment, if I can bring joy into their life, that's a wonderful thing. And that's what I think the baseball players and football players and basketball players and hockey players are recognizing now, that people do love them, that they are part of their life. And we saw that in 2014, 2015 with the Royals, the way they brought the entire community together and celebrated together, and had 800,000 people show up down at Union Station to say thank you to them. And that's what I think sports can be all about. And just like you said, Brent, that's what our athletes now are recognizing, their importance to their fans, and they're reaching out and saying, hey, I really appreciate you.
Steve Fizeok, when you were a kid, like what your mom's saying, you dreamt one day that you could probably, I don't know if you ever dreamt you could play, but, you know, how did we ever think that Kauffman Stadium, Royal Stadium, Kauffman Stadium, the K, would be still, in my opinion, a premier ballpark, and now, it's darn got to be the oldest one in the American League. If it's not, it's close.
It is, and obviously they redid it just a few years ago, I think in 2010, and it really kind of really dressed it up beautifully. And it's still a very nice ballpark. It holds about 38,000. But I think it's the enthusiasm. And when you win in a smaller market, everybody shows up. When the Angels won in 2002, it was really important to the community of Anaheim and to Orange County as well. But they had the Dodgers and the Kings and the Lakers and USC and UCLA and on and on. And in Kansas City, we really have the two great teams, and the Chiefs, who won the Super Bowl this year, and the Kansas City Royals. They do have Sporting KC and soccer, but it's not the same. So those two programs, the Chiefs and the Royals, mean so much. So when they have success, it brings the entire community, not only the Kansas City community, but Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, Oklahoma, Arkansas, all together, and they fall in love, and it was Royal Blue in those two seasons, 14 and 15.
From the walls of the K to the walls of Luka, it is not uncommon for me to meet people in our industry, whether they are athletes, whether they are on our side of things, who have an artistic side, another side. And in your case, I think it's one of those great things, all those years traveling, you probably read a lot, but you also have a... I would guess, just from your style of play-by-play, an inherent appreciation for history and the human element of it. And that came together when you, I guess, went to Luca, Italy, and The Walls of Luca, your first historical novel, came out of that, right?
You're right. And it was 2006. My wife and I were vacationing in Italy. And this might be hard to believe, but we were in southern Tuscany, and I actually had this vivid dream of this great walled city and two families struggling to produce a great wine. And I woke up, and instead of going back to bed, I went to the bathroom, and I got a piece of paper out, and I wrote down the outline of what my dream was about, because it was a rather vivid dream. And I told my wife about it the next day, and she thought, wow, that's really cool. And of course, then we go on about our way and we vacation and we go visit Florence and Venice and all of the, we hike the Cinque Terre and we see Italy. Well, the last week we were there, about 10 days later, we are meeting some friends in this town of Lucca, Italy. And as we're driving in, my wife Stacy was driving, and I go, oh my gosh, as I see these great walls, I said, this is it. This is the city that was in my dream. Well, now I'm interested. So I buy a book on the history of Lucca and found out just the dramatic history of it, that it was once the number two banking capital in all of Europe. It was at the end of the Silk Trade Center, and just it had this fascinating history. So I started writing. And as fate would have it, sometimes when you lose a job, it inspires you to do something else. And I have an awesome wife in Stace. And after I lost my job with the Angels, she met me at the front door the day I lost the job. And she said, hey, what cool new adventure is ahead for us? And I thought, what a great wife to be that supportive and rather be fearful. And a week later, she said, you know, Steve, you've been writing this novel for 3 years. Now it's time to finish it. Somebody else is going to hire you in the business. So I did the bulk of the writing in 2009 and 2010 before, I'm sorry, 2010 and 2011 before we got the job with the Royals in 2012. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I love to tell a story. And that's what a play-by-play broadcaster does in football, basketball, and baseball through the years. I've always been inspired of what happens when individuals truly leave their ego in the locker room and come out and play for each other. And I thought, that's true in business, too. So my story is about two families trying to produce a great Sangiovese wine in Italy during their dark days of World War I and the rise of fascism. And I wrote it. I eventually would hire a developmental editor. She liked it. She had me change many, many things and helped me dramatically. And then she said, Steve, I think we need to get this into some reviewers' hands. So I sent it to reviewers. They liked it. It got 5 stars. And then it started winning awards for historical fiction. And we won the Reader Views Best Historical Fiction Award in 2018. And we won again for Reader's Favorites in 2019 for the sequel Above the Walls. So it's really done very well, and it's been inspiring because, quite frankly, Brent, when I wrote it, I looked at it and I go, this isn't very good. It's not, you know, it's certainly not East of Eden and John Steinbeck or Wallace Stegner or Grace, but it's a cute little story, and apparently people like it. We've sold people have downloaded over 100,000 copies, and now I'm writing my second book in a sequel, and this one will have something to do with baseball.
How about that? Okay, well, I want to talk more about that. It's inspiring to hear your words. And, Steve, to anybody out there who's finding themselves out of touch with their dreams, these are the things we want you to remember, that, hey, you know, you don't have to just quote Walt Disney. You can quote Steve Fizeot, too. We just got to keep true to our storytelling, true to our heart, and you can make some great things happen. Going to take a break. I want to pick back up with some more about the walls of Lucca. Then, of course, we're going to talk more baseball. And I have this day in history that Steve's going to probably already know. But we'll talk about all that when we come back. You're listening to Scorecard Scribblings. Let's listen to a little more Steve as we go to break.
Now the batter is Isbell. Swung on. Belted. High. Deep to center field. Thompson is back. At the fence, it's off the top of the fence. Isbell not stopping at second, going to third. They're going to send him home, and he will score. An inside the park home run by Kyle Isbell. He's a flyer out of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and they're called the Running Rebels, and we just saw one of the Rebels run there.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004. But our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. We bring you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites.
You'll hear from experts on national security, the environment, veterans affairs, world politics, and everything in between.
Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your John Deere Ag and Turf products.
Join us every Sunday from noon until 2. wethepeopleradio.us.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge, defending your rights as a Christian, a parent, and a citizen. Here's Brad Dickus.
California lawmakers created a new statute in 2018 preventing public employers from disparaging unions. The statute was designed to undercut the 2018 Supreme Court Janus decision, which gave public employees an opt-out right from paying any union dues. Now, seven elected officials in California are suing the California Public Employment Relations Board for violating their First Amendment rights of free speech. Well, Pacific Justice Institute will provide free legal help to any employees who, as a matter of conscience, seek to opt out from paying union dues.
The Pacific Justice Institute provides legal representation to individuals without charge. Learn more at pacificjustice.org. That's pacificjustice.org.
This is the best of scorecard scribblings.
The big beard is on the hill for the Tigers, and Steve Fisiak, this Detroit bullpen, has had some scary moments this year.
Indeed they have, and Jabba the Chamberlain comes out, a big, strong right-hander. He looks like Hagrid from Hogwarts in Harry Potter. I mean, hair just explodes out of his face. It's not organized at all. He's got orange shoes on, pulls his pants up right around the knees, black socks showing, and I mean, he's a big bear of a man. You would imagine him being in the Rocky Mountains back in the early 1800s as one of the trailblazers.
Kind of guy that fishes without a...
That is great. That is Steve Fisiak, our guest tonight. And Steve is as kind and thoughtful a guy. You won't hear him say mean things about somebody. You were simply describing Jabba Chamberlain, and many people, when they first saw him, they were scared to death of him.
You know, it is true, because some guys want to have that fear factor. Al Roboski wanted to have that fear factor. Rich Goose Gossage had that fear factor, and I think Jabba Chamberlain wanted to have it, and he threw really hard early in his career and then obviously hurt his arm and didn't have the same kind of velocity, but he thought he would counter it by just having this Hagrid-like looking a beard and wildness, and just be snorting and spitting as he threw the ball to home plate. And, he had some success, but when he lost velocity, he lost that success too.
Yeah, I think over the years, of course, velocity, guys that were able to maintain that by learning how to pitch are so special. You, of course, we both experienced Lee Smith late in his career. He had learned how to pitch. He still was just so physically, he already had that thing going. Goose Gossage, you know, had such great movement. Even when he lost stuff on the fastball, it moved, but they were able to learn how to pitch as they got older.
And probably my favorite pitcher of all time is a Hall of Famer and a guy who didn't throw that hard, but was absolutely brilliant and could locate a pitch inside a teacup if the catcher taped it to his kneecap. And that man's Greg Maddux. I only did two of his games when I was with ESPN, but they were two of the most beautiful games I ever watched. John Smoltz was another one who I really liked to broadcast his games, because just the way they thought, the way they set up hitters, and the way they would outthink them or get a hitter to guess at what wasn't coming. I don't know how many times I'd be thinking like, well, Maddux just threw him a sinker on the outside corner, and then went with the changeup. So he has him down 0-2 in the count. I'll bet you he throws this pitch, and he would totally lock the guy up and sometimes throw a fastball right down the middle, and the guy was thinking something totally different. And you just see him like, oh, my gosh, I could have just crushed that ball. But he was one of the greatest pitchers I've ever seen throw, Greg Maddux.
Yeah, I think those are the things that you see. There are guys that could perform in any generation. Clearly, Maddux is one of those. Clearly, guys like Bob Gibson, clearly. Hey, I grew up watching the great Phil Niekro. I mean, I was most of those Braves teams weren't very good when I was a kid. Then when I got older, obviously, they got good, the ones you mentioned. But the great Phil Niekro, who used to joke that his off-season workout regimen was mowing the lawn and walking out to pick up the paper in the morning.
You're right. And Rex Hudler tells the story that he was part of the Yankees team when Niekro won his 300th game. And
yeah.
He says that Phil decided on that occasion he would not throw one knuckleball, that he only threw fastballs and curveballs, and he won his 300th game. He didn't want to throw the knuckleball. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's the story that Rex Hudler tells, and I'm sticking with it.
You know, I love Rex Hudler. He is he's just a great man. He's done an awful lot for an awful lot of people, but that joy that he brings, because I remember him in tears when the Angels lost. I was a young reporter covering that for CNN. And then I just remember how kind and good he was to everyone every time I've seen him. And yeah, he's goofy. But let's face it, when I Google, okay, Steve, so you and you, I don't know what, I'd say you're the straight man, and Rex is definitely not the straight man in your comic duo. When I Googled both of you, I don't find any bloopers of Steve Fizioc. I think I may have found one from back when you worked in Cincinnati with Jerry Springer, WLWT. Maybe you misstumbled over a word. But Hud, I could find Huds all over, and he just laughs his way through them all.
He is so much fun to work with, and he's a dear friend. He only lives a couple of miles from me, so we carpool quite often to the ballpark or to our traveling assignments when we go with the team. But you're right. He is just a dear human being, and he's one of the kindest souls I've been around, even when he was a player. I mean, we hear these stories of guys and their ego, and there are some of those, but I'll be honest with you. I think like 90% of the ball players, whether it's football, basketball, and baseball that I've worked with, are just regular guys. And in 1996, that was my first year with the Angels, and Rex had his best year in the major leagues, hit over 300, had double figures in home runs, a bunch of stolen bases. But the team was terrible. They lost like 95 games. But the one guy we could go to win or lose was Rex Hudler. And he would always give us something good to say. He was always a positive. He has done so much for charitable organizations, not only in the Southern California community, but now the Kansas City community. He's just a good person, one of my best friends.
Now, has he written any raving reviews of the walls of Luca?
You know what? He may have started it, but he certainly didn't finish it. He did purchase it, and I did read his book Splinters, which is is about his time sitting on the bench in Major League Baseball. But Brent, I think he may be the last player in Major League history who spent 10 years in the minor leagues and also was able to put in 10 years in the major leagues. I don't think we'll see that again. And he was the last to do it, but that tells you his perseverance, his stick-to-itiveness, and his enthusiasm, his love for the game.
Love for the game. It's like I talk about, we're the home of the Reading Colt 45 Summer Collegiate. We do those games on the radio, and, you know, there's a story in every one of those fans and those young people who are there, and I think that is the great connection of baseball. It is the great American game because of it just weaves us historically.
You're right, and my entire career did all three sports, football and basketball and baseball, but as I got older, I fell more and more in love with the great game of baseball, and maybe it's because of the time you have to appreciate the game. I mean, nothing really happens until the pitcher lets go of the baseball. And the older I get, the more I love it. I even love the slow times in the game. I love broadcasting, particularly on radio. And my favorite broadcasters are the guys who did radio, guys like Fred White and Jack Buck, Bill King, Vin Scully, and Ernie Harwell, and on, Denny Matthews, who I work with, who's a Hall of Famer. It's just been a wonderful career.
Well, it's still going, and of course, the second career will keep you busy too. That is, looking forward to the new books, but right now, still enjoying The Walls of Lucca. I've been reading it myself, but, I'm not done with it yet, so no spoilers. So I can't get to the follow-up yet, but there's so many beautiful moments in it, and very early on, the character Isabella says everything needs to be encouraged. All of God's creations, whether human, animal, or plant. Now, there's a little bit of your philosophy in there, isn't it, Steve?
There is, and Isabella is the protagonist in the story, and not only that one, but also Above the Walls, which picks up in 1938 after Mussolini writes his Manifesto of Race, solidifying his union with Adolf Hitler. But what I'm really interested, Brent, is I'm interested in faith lost, faith found. And that doesn't necessarily have to be faith in God, but if you think of the characters in The Walls of Lucca, Franco, who's a pacifist, goes off to World War One, and he sees some horrible, sees terrible horror in World War One, and he does lose his faith in God. But Giovanni, who is the owner of the vineyard, he loses his faith in his marriage. Susanna, who is his wife, loses her faith in the government. And Angelina, who is the winemaker, who loses her husband in World War One, and now raises four kids and is pushed into the winemaking role, she loses her faith in humanity and life. So the question is, when you lose faith, how do you get it back? And that's what I think draws me to team sports. Every single athlete has their faith challenged, their faith in themselves, their faith in the team. How do you get it back? How do you connect it? How do you keep it together so you can win a world championship? And in the two championships that I've been a part of, that faith was challenged with the 2002 Angels, but they were able to rally and pull it together. The same thing happened with the 14 and 15 Royals, who went to back-to-back World Series and won in 15. Those teams in 14 and 15 finished last in home runs and last in walks. No team has ever won a world championship doing that. The only way you win is together. And whether it's a vineyard, how do you pull together to have a successful wine, or how do you pull together to have a successful baseball team? And I think that's what has drawn me to storytelling on radio and television to do sports, and also what drew me to write The Walls of Lucca and Above the Walls.
Steve Fiziak, our guest. We've got one more segment. Thanks for sticking around with us, Steve. It is just a real pleasure. I want to talk about some great moments in baseball that you've experienced and a few that I've experienced or heard or seen. You know, that's the fun time. We can do that stuff right about now when we come back. This is Scorecard Scribblings. Steve Fiziak, Kansas City Royals broadcaster and the author of The Walls of Lucca.
Arizona can go with the navy blue, but they chose red because they went with red on Thursday and upset the Cal Bears. Josiah Turner is the point guard, number 11. Nick Johnson hit his first three. Here is Bob, sensational against California, but misses his first three after he made 5 of 6 in Berkeley.
So what's Scorecard Scribblings all about?
I was scared for my life at that point. I remember looking to the right and seeing all the medical supplies there, and I'm just thinking, are they going to cut off a leg? What are we doing here?
I had a coach that would come up to me on the plane, stick his hand out. I knew what he wanted. Who am I not to give him to him? Like, I thought, okay, job security.
We came to the ballpark every day. We knew we were going to win. It's a great experience, a great feeling to be on a club like that.
Scorecard Scribblings with Brent Weber, Wednesday night from 6 to 7 on KCNR.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to a North State with no more homeless pets.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans' issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
This is the best of scorecard scribblings.
The last time these two hooked up, Vladdy took him way yard twice. He hits it a mile high and deep. Is this number 300? Yes! Vladimir Guerrero's 300th career home run.
Well, Steve Fiziak joining us tonight on scorecard scribblings. Steve, you still pinch yourself at some of the events like that that you've had a chance to call? Because people, I ask people, do you think of what you're going to say in advance? And truth be told, probably not, right?
No, you really try and let the moment tell you what to say. But there have been so many times where you'll hear yourself back going, oh, man, I remember that moment now. And the 300th home run by Vladimir Guerrero that you just rolled in. I had not heard that since I broadcast that moment many, many years ago. But those are the moments you love. The other moments I really cherish is when a young man is making his major league debut. Because as a broadcaster, I'm thinking, this is not only about the kid. This is about mom and dad growing up, brothers and sisters. You know, mom making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches as he goes out to his little league game. And so this moment, his first at-bat in the big leagues, or his first pitch as a pitcher in the big leagues, I want to make sure that is chronicled well and that I'm able to give that young man a moment that he'll remember. And that's what I think about as a father and a grandfather. I mean, some of my greatest moments now are remembering watching my children play, or now watching my grandchildren play.
Well, I think of so many. I want to throw to one here because it is a this day in history kind of thing, and it kind of plays in with what we're talking about. On this day in April 8, 1974, Henry Louis Aaron came to the plate against Al Downing of the Los Angeles Dodgers, and this happened. Let's listen.
He's sitting on 714. The pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7:15. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron. The fireworks are going.
And there it is. That's the late, great Milo Hamilton calling there, Henry Aaron. I was a kid. We had moved to Atlanta, so, you know, that was my dream to just hear him, see him play, even though it was later in his career. I do think Al Downing gave him one to hit, though.
I would say that you still got to square up a round baseball with a round bat. That is hard to do.
Right. You mentioned some of your favorite broadcasters growing up. You've had a chance to work with some pretty great ones, too. But is there anybody who just stuck with you when you say, not that I want to follow someone's style, but that's the kind of guy I could emulate?
Well, Fred White was my first one because he did my alma mater in Kansas State, and he also broadcast the Royals for 25 years. And just a terrific guy, and I remember him broadcasting the Wildcats Big A Championship. Jack Buck, I used to listen to KMOX do the St. Louis Cardinals. I loved his style. I also loved listening to Monday Night Football with Hank Stram. And Ben Scully, in my opinion, is the greatest baseball broadcaster of all time. And I'll tell you a story, Brent. I was driving to the Big A to do an evening game, which was going to be the opener, the season opener for the Angels. Well, the Dodgers were opening in the afternoon in San Francisco, and the Giants were debuting their new ballpark. And I remember driving on Santiago Canyon, the back way to the Big A, and Ben was describing the ballpark, the view, the glove in left field, the bay area, the barges and the sailboats on the water, the way the sun's rays were reflecting off the water. And it was so compelling and so riveting that I literally drove off the road and had to yank my car back on. Vin Scully, in my opinion, is the greatest storyteller of all time and just a brilliant baseball broadcaster. And I love my time in Southern California, not only because I got to broadcast alongside with him when I did the Angels and he did the Dodgers, but after they had the freeway series, I would usually share a glass of wine with him as we let the crowd let out of Dodger Stadium or Anaheim, and we'd talk about the game of baseball. And he was just a great person. And I told him one time, I finally got the courage to tell Vin Scully that, you know, it's really wonderful when your heroes are as nice as you want them to be. And that certainly was the case with Mr. Scully, just a great human being.
You know, you also mentioned, and separating our friendships from our professionalism, when we love and want to be fair and honest about the men and women we cover is difficult. But you've been able to do that, I think. I am sure there are countless individuals, coaches that you've seen work, maybe some that we don't know, players who've overcome that have had similar effects on you in your career.
Yeah, Sparky Anderson is the first guy that comes to mind. He and I worked together our first 3 years with the Angels, and you talk about one of the nice men in the game, and I learned more from him, not only about baseball, but also about life, like how to treat your wife, how to treat your kids, and he was just an incredible man at understanding people, and I'll always cherish that time, that those 3 years I had with him. And, you know, obviously he was a great manager with the Big Red Machine, won another world championship with the Detroit Tigers in 1984, but just a beautiful human being. And I would call him on the phone, and we'd talk about raising kids. We'd talk about what our plans were for Thanksgiving or Christmas. And those are the memories I cherish most about the people in the game.
Steve Fisiak, our guest, bring us back to now. You're obviously closer to the decision makers than I am, but how do you see, you know, God willing, us being able to play baseball this year and to resume life and some normalcy? How do you see Major League Baseball coming back in 2020?
Well, I think they have to really just completely take the direction from the medical experts in the field, how this coronavirus, if we can get this curve down. I think that is so important because we're very concerned about the safety of not only our fans, but our players, But I do think that Major League Baseball has an interesting idea. I don't know if they're going to move forward with that, and it would be at a certain time. But just some of the ideas that they had where all 30 teams would be in Arizona, and maybe perhaps we start that way, where when things get completely clear, maybe we play like 30 or 40 or 50 games in Arizona, and then we're able to get back to Kansas City and Detroit and Cleveland and Minnesota or wherever our teams play. I'm hoping that